thought that he would soon be leaving all this beauty, he felt a momentary pang, but he comforted himself by recollecting how decisively he was acting. Action, he repeated aloud, and going over to the sideboard, he helped himself to an agreeable mixture of bacon and fish. Breakfast over, Dennis repaired to the terrace and, sitting there, raised the enormous bulwark of Times against the possible assaults of Mr. Scogan, who showed an unappeased desire to go on talking about the universe. Secure behind the crackling pages, he meditated. In the light of this brilliant morning, the emotions of last night seemed somehow rather remote. And what if he had seen them embracing in the moonlight? Perhaps it didn't mean much after all. And even if it did, why shouldn't he stay? He felt strong enough to stay, strong enough to be aloof, disinterested, mere friendly acquaintance. Even if he weren't strong enough, what time do you think the telegram will arrive? Asked Mary, suddenly thrusting in upon him over the top of the paper. Dennis started guiltily. I don't know at all, he said. I was only wondering, said Mary, because there's a very good train at 3:27, and it would be nice if you could catch it, wouldn't it? Awfully nice, he agreed weakly. He felt as though he were making arrangements for his own funeral. Train leaves Waterloo 3:27, no flowers. Mary was gone. No, he would have glowed if he had let himself be hurried down to the necropolis like this. He was glowed. The sight of Mr. Scogan looking out with a hungry expression from the drawing room window made him precipitately hoist the Times once more. For a long while he kept it hoisted, lowering it at last to take another cautious peep at his surroundings, he found himself, with what astonishment, confronted by Anne's faint, amused, malicious smile. She was standing before him, the woman who was a tree. The swaying grace of her movement arrested in a pose that seemed itself a movement. How long have you been standing there? He asked when he had done gaping at her. Oh, about half an hour, I suppose, she said airily. You are so very deep in your paper. Head over ears. I didn't like to disturb you. You look lovely this morning, Dennis exclaimed. It was the first time he had ever had the courage to utter a personal remark of the kind. Anne held up her hand as though to ward off a blow. Don't bludgeon me, please. She sat down on the bench beside him. He was a nice boy, she thought, quite charming, and Gombauld's violent insistences were really becoming rather tiresome. Why don't you wear white trousers, she asked. I like you so much in white trousers. They're at the wash, Dennis replied rather curtly. This white trouser business was all in the wrong spirit. He was just preparing a scheme to maneuver the conversation back to the proper path when Mr. Scogan suddenly darted out of the house, crossed the terrace with clockwork rapidity, and came to a halt in front of the bench on which they were seated. To go on with our interesting conversation about the mind, then it's moving a shade to your right. He wedged himself between them on the bench. And if you would shift a few inches to the left, my dear Anne, thank you. Discreet, I think, was what I was saying. You were, said Anne. Dennis was speechless. They were taking their afternoon lunch and coffee in the library when the telegram arrived. Dennis blushed guiltily as he took the orange envelope from the salver and tore it open. Return at once, urgent family business. It was too ridiculous, as if he had any family business. Wouldn't it be best just to crumple the thing and put it in his pocket without saying anything about it? He looked up. Mary's large blue china eyes were fixed upon him, seriously, penetratingly. He blushed more deeply than ever, hesitated in a horrible uncertainty. What's your telegram about? Mary asked significantly. He lost his head. I'm afraid, he mumbled, I'm afraid this means I shall have to go back to town at once. He frowned at the telegram ferociously. But that's absurd, impossible, cried Anne. She'd been standing by the window talking to Gumbold, but at Dennis's words she came swaying across the room towards him. It's urgent, he repeated desperately. But you've only been here such a short time, Anne protested. I know, he said, utterly miserable. Oh, if only she could understand women were supposed to have intuition. If he must go, he must, put in Mary firmly. Yes, I must. He looked at the telegram again for inspiration. You see, it's urgent family business, he explained. Priscilla got up from her chair in some excitement. I had a distinct presentiment of this last night, she said. A distinct presentiment. A mere coincidence, no doubt, said Mary, brushing Mrs. Wimbush out of the conversation. There's a very good train at 3:27. She looked at the clock on the mantelpiece. You'll have nice time to pack. I'll order the motor at once. Henry Wimbush rang the bell. The funeral was well underway. It was awful, awful. I'm wretched you should be going, said Anne. Dennis turned towards her. She really did look wretched. He abandoned himself hopelessly, fantastically to his destiny. This was what came of action, of doing something decisive. If only he'd just let things drift, if only. I shall miss your conversation, said Mr. Scogan. Mary looked at the clock again. I think perhaps you ought to go and pack, she said. Obediently,